Here comes the Indie Week. John Federson here for the North Carolina Reading Service, which presents the Indie Week for our blind and print-impaired listening audience. Our issue is dated October the 20th of 2022. Our gorgeous theme music this week is delivered by... Oh, wait, I see a note. I'm not to divulge the names of our performers today. I don't know why that is. It's a mystery to me as well. So let's get on with our articles. Of course, the headline story or the top story at the cover of Indie Week is the recent mass shooting in a Raleigh neighborhood. It's captivated the national news, and many politicians have things to say about it, and plain folks as well. And what I'll read about it today from the issue, the cover story itself doesn't give any more information, just some background, and lays most of it at the fact that guns are available. And also says that a candlelight vigil is set for the victims of the Headingham shooting. It'll be held Sunday with the governor, Mayor Baldwin, and NAACP President Gerald Givens will speak on ways to prevent gun violence. And if there's time at the end of the broadcast, I may read some of that headline article. First, election early voting begins, and it runs today, which is Thursday on the 20th of October, to Election Day. And the website IndieWeek.com gives lots of tips for early voters, how to do it, and loads of website links, which I don't have time to read now, and I think we've read some of those, about absentee ballots, mail-in ballots, etc. And there's one place. This is for more information about early voting. Please visit Vote Early in Person. And I'll just click that link, and it's NCSBE. NCSBE, that's North Carolina State Board of Elections, .gov/voting/vote-early-person. Vote-early-person. NCSBE.gov/voting/vote-early-person. That's what I have from there. And talk about registering and all the links you could possibly need. And then the bulk of the print edition, well, at IndieWeek.com, are the independents' recommendations for voting. And it's several pages long, several pages. And there's a one capsule page that's intended to be cut out and taken with people who want to pay attention to what the independent selects. And I will go down all of that list first, which is their political office. In every election that the Indie Week is carrying, they may not reach that far afield, but you'll see. And if there's time, then at the end, there are some of their big recommendations, Senate judgeships and things like that. If there's time, I'll go into more detail. First, though, I want to cover a local for Durham, Helping More Seniors Stay in Their Homes is the title of this, and this is from IndieWeek.com by Tomasi McDonald. And it changes to the Durham Tax Relief Program. Last year, between October 6th and December 31st, 204 Durham County homeowners received tax assistance through an inaugural program to help them stay in their homes. This year, the Low Income Homeowners Relief, LIHR, program started on August 1st and ends again this December 31st. Even with a two-month head start, 214 homeowners have already applied and 133 applicants have already been approved for tax assistance. Lee Little, program manager with Durham County's Aging and Adult Services, says the county is, quote, doing great this year. Last year we had over 300 applicants. We have already hit that number, and it's just the second month. We're definitely exceeding what we did last year. This is a joint effort between the county's tax office and the Department of Social Services. Little says there were several factors that led to the creation of this assistance program. The pandemic was one reason, but also rising property tax costs, inflation, and the economic impact on older homeowners, many of whom are on fixed incomes. Little says, one, our concern was whether our vulnerable population on fixed incomes would get the relief they needed to stay in their homes. It became a priority in Durham County for people to be able to age in place and remain in their homes. Last year, in order to be eligible for tax assistance, low-income homeowners must have owned their home for 10 years or more and could receive up to $750 for their current property tax bill. Little says he thinks that with LIHR now in its second year, more homeowners have heard about the program, but he also points to significant guideline changes that will likely help more low-income homeowners. According to a county press release, the program will exclusively serve Durham homeowners who are currently living in their homes for 5 years. The county's low-income homeowners relief program was established last year to provide this tax assistance for residents who earn less than or equal to 80% of Durham's average median income. Last year, eligible homeowners could receive up to $750. This year, the county officials unveiled a three-tiered income model that will be used to determine the amount of tax assistance each homeowner may receive. A homeowner who earns 30% or less of the average median income will be eligible, for instance, for $1,500, the maximum amount awarded. The award will apply only to the current tax bills of eligible homeowners who, quote, will receive a letter of their award prior to the releasing of funds, and all assistance will be paid directly to the county tax office, according to the release. Homeowners who are interested in applying for tax assistance must show proof of residency with the current property tax bill that lists their name on their primary residence. They're also asked to show proof of household income and photo identification. Officials stated in the release, it's important to note that property taxes in Durham are due January the 5th of next year. After January 5th, interest will accrue on the outstanding accounts. They add that county residents who are eligible for the program and have already paid their 22 property tax will receive a letter for the amount they are approved and will receive reimbursement from the tax office. That's if they've overpaid. Homeowners can apply for the tax assistance program online by visiting Durham County's Department of Social Services website. If you need help applying for the program, you can call this phone number, 919-560-8000. 919-560-8000. And that will let you schedule an appointment with a low-income homeowner relief specialist. And a melancholy article, again from Durham, by Tomasi McDonald. North Carolina Mutual will cease operations this month. During its heyday, the insurance company was the economic engine that generated the rise of a solid middle and upper middle class in the Bull City and went on to become the largest black-owned business in the world. When Mutual Life Insurance was established in 1898, it happened during the height of white supremacist campaigns of terror across the state that led to a racial massacre and overthrow of a duly elected multiracial government in Wilmington that same year. During its heyday, the insurance company was the economic engine that generated the rise of a solid middle and upper middle class in the Bull City and went on to become the largest black-owned business in the world. Established by business leaders John Merrick, A.M. Moore, and Charles C.C. Spalding, the work of the triumvirate remains unparalleled in their quest to create a proud economic self-sufficiency in the face of Jim Crow. The founders created a prosperous high tea district. North Carolina Mutual was the flagship economic operation that garnered the community accolades as the Black Wall Street. Indeed, for nearly 20 years, between 1968, when it first opened its doors at 411 West Chapel Hill Street, until 1987, the 14-story skyscraper was the tallest building among Durham's then porous skyline. Last week, Mike Causey, the state's insurance commissioner, announced that a Wake County Superior Court judge declared NC Mutual insolvent and approved a petition to liquidate the once venerable insurance institution. NC Mutual's last day is October the 31st, according to a Department of Insurance press release made public last week. That release notes the company was founded as the North Carolina Mutual and Provident Association and at one point conducted business in 48 states, the District of Columbia, and has nearly a quarter million policyholders. Things went horribly left for NC Mutual in 2016 after a former investment manager was indicted for participating in a scheme that bilked the company out of more than $34 million. Federal Department of Justice officials announced in 2020 after that indictment was unsealed. Federal prosecutors say Bradley Reifler of Millbrook, New York, was an investment advisor over the $34 million when they charged him with four counts of wire fraud and one count of perjury. On December 3, 2018, North Carolina Mutual was placed into rehabilitation and a moratorium on surrenders and loans became effective. State insurance officials stated, Causey and his staff believe it's reasonable to work toward the development of a plan of rehabilitation for NC Mutual with the goal of returning NC Mutual to a condition where all contractual claims of policyholders can be honored. But if part of the rehab goal was to keep the doors open, NC Mutual never recovered from the financial blow it endured after it was defrauded out of tens of millions of dollars. Causey said, I have tremendous respect for the role NC Mutual played in providing insurance products to citizens for over 100 years. However, my number one priority as commissioner is protecting policyholders. The court's order of liquidation helps to further that priority by ensuring that the policyholder claims continue to be paid. All right, election time, election news, and election endorsements. And this is for Wake County, Orange County, Durham County, And I think there may be more, but I'll get to those. This is a full page. This is just a name authored on this page. As I said, there's paragraphs about the most of these candidates later, and we'll see how much time we have left. So just start at the top from Indy Week, the voter guide, Indy's endorsements. For the United States Senate, Sherry Beasley. Judicial races, which are elected statewide. Supreme Court Justice, Seat 3, Lucy Inman. Seat 5, Sam J. Irvin IV. The Court of Appeals, North Carolina Court of Appeals, Seat 8, Carolyn Thompson. Seat 9, Brad A. Salmon. Seat 10, Gail Adams. And Seat 11, Darren Jackson. In local races, then, U.S. House 4, Valerie Fouché. NC Senate, District 20, Natalie Murdoch. District 22, Mike Woodard. District 2, Ray Jeffers. District 29, Vernetta Alston. District 30, Marcia Morey. District 31, Zach Hawkins. For Durham District Attorney, Satana DeBerry. For Clerk of Superior Court, Amina Thompson. For Durham Sheriff, Clarence Burkhead. For Soil and Water District Supervisor, David Harris. NC Superior Court's Judge, District 14B, Seat 1, Brian C. Wilkes, Court 14, Seat 1, Dave Hall. District Court 14, Seat 2, Doretta Walker. Court 14, Seat 3, Kevin E. Jones. District Court 14, Seat 4, Dorothy H. Mitchell. Seat 5, Clayton Jones. Seat 6, Amanda L. Maris. For Durham County School Bonds, they recommend a vote of yes. The same for Durham County Community College Bonds, yes. Durham County Museum Bonds, yes. All right, we're zipping along here. Orange County, United States House 4, Valerie Fouché. Senate District 23, Greg Meyer. And District 50 for the House, Renee Price. And District 56 for the House, Alan Buansi. District Attorney for Orange County recommended Jeff Niemann. And for Orange Sheriff, Charles Blackwood. Clerk of Superior Court, Mark Kleinschmidt. And the Orange Register of Deeds, Mark Chilton. Now for NC Superior Court 15B, Seat 1, Allison Grine. Seat 2, Alan Badur. District Court 15B, Seat 1, C. Todd Roper. Then we have the Orange Board of Commissioners at Large, Sally Green. District 1, Jamizetta Bedford. District 1, an unexpired term, Anna Richards. And District 2, Earl McKee. And for Orange Soil and Water District Supervisor W, Chris Hogan. Now in Wake County, U.S. House 2, Deborah Ross. U.S. House 13, Wiley Nickel. North Carolina Senate, District 13, Lisa Grafstein. Senate District 14, Dan Blue. District 15, District 15, Jay Chowdhury. 16, Gail Adcock. Senate District 17, Sydney Batch. District 18, Mary Willis Bode, BODE. House District 11, Allison Dahl, DAHLE. District 21, Ya Liu. District 33, Rosa Yu Gill. House District 34, Tim Longest. District 35, Terrence Everett. District 36, Julie Van Heffen. And District 37, Christine Kelly. Abe Jones is recommended for the House District 38. James Robertson for District 39. Joe John for House District 40. District 41, Maria Cervenia. District 49, Cynthia Ball. District 66, Sarah Crawford. For Wake, District Attorney Nancy Lauren Freeman is endorsed. And for Sheriff, Willie Rowe, R-O-W-E. Wake Clerk of Superior Court, Blair Williams. And then the County Commissioners for Wake Board, there are four. District 1, Donald Mial, M-I-A-L. District 2, Matt Calabria. District 3, Cheryl Stallings. District 7, Vicki Adamson. Now, there are two recommendations for Soil and Water District Supervisor in Wake County, Jenna Wadsworth and Alex Baldwin. I guess you can take your choice on that. Wake County Board of Education. We have nine districts, and there's an endorsement for each. District 1, Ben Clapsaddle. District 2, Monica Johnson Hostler. District 3, Doug Hammack. Tara Waters for District 4. Lynn Edmonds for District 5. District 6, Sam Hershey. District 7, Chris Hagerty. District 8, Lindsay Mahaffey. And District 9, Tyler Swanson. That's all for the Board of Education in Wake County. And the bond issues, school bonds vote yes. Wake Tech bonds vote yes. Now we have North Carolina District Court. That will be District 10A, Seat 1, Paul Ridgway. District 10A, Seat 3, Cynthia Kenny. That's an unexpired term. District 10B, Seat 1, David Baker. District 10D, Seat 1, Margaret Eagles. District 10D, Seat 4, Rhonda Graham Young in an unexpired seat. For District Court 10E, Seat 1, Sam Hamandani. For 10E, Seat 2, Louis Meyer. And District 10F, Seat 1, Jennifer Bedford. All right, now I'm torn, actually, in this election season about letting this endorsements go. Properly, there's no surprise. The Indy and the Indy Week are self-styled progressive. They tend to recommend progressive, liberal, and democratic candidates for the most part. But they give several reasons for them doing so, and I did not get to any of those reasons for the couple hundred of names I just mentioned. I think what I'll do is I'll read a couple other articles from other segments of the Indy Week, and I will go back, particularly, folks, if whatever side you're interested in, it's the small races, the court races, the city council races, the school board races that are garnering, for various reasons, lots of attention, but many people don't understand or don't know or don't even care what the rationale of the elections are. They just have time to look at commercials or what have you. Fair enough. But if there's time, I will read some of these smaller, so-called smaller market offices and detail what the Indy Week has to say about them. For now, let's talk about hard apple cider. Refreshing change. North Carolina cideries like Botanist and Barrel and the James Creek Cider House see a gentle new craft cider renaissance. I'm a big cider fan, so I'm going to read this with relish. Right outside of Danville, Virginia, there's an orchard where Kether Smith's grandfather used to spend his days picking apples. Now Smith and her team at Botanist and Barrel in Cedar Grove, North Carolina, grow much of their own produce while also buying apples from that same orchard. Smith, partner and head cider maker, says we've worked with them from the very beginning. It's kind of a fun little thing. Don't let that word craft fool you, though, writes P.J. Morales. Botanist and Barrel might be smaller, but it's not small. It certainly doesn't feel small as you venture through their farmhouse, past the juicer that presses dozens of apples a minute, to enter the 65-degree cold fermenting room where 4 2,000-liter tankers sit on the left, full to the brim, with aging cider. On the right, a bevy of 50-gallon barrels, once used for wines and spirits, impart their past flavors on the ciders inside. Botanist and Barrel ciders are distributed to stores in the Carolinas, Georgia, and even California, with the cidery also offering a cider club subscription that ships products to customers nationwide 4 times a year. In this space, craft doesn't always mean small. It means different, varied, and unique. Smith says it can vary from batch to batch. So we have to teach people, you know, this is the apple of this season from this orchard with this weather, and it's going to change, and it's going to vary. things are going to be slightly different, and we embrace those differences. Hard ciders have experienced massive growth in popularity in recent years. Though only making up 1 to 2% of the current U.S. alcohol market as of 2021, hard cider's profit for the fiscal period ending last December, or 2 Decembers ago, was almost $500 million. That's profit. That represents an 11% increase in profits over that year. According to a market data forecast report, the industry is projected to have a continued average growth rate of 10% each year through 2026. While millennials and baby boomers currently make up 69% of cider drinkers, according to a report from the American Cider Association, 20% of Gen Zers identify as cider drinkers. With the average age of cider drinkers getting younger, two-thirds of cider drinkers going to bars weekly, and more Gen Zers hitting drinking age, the potential for growth is clear. That growth will come from people like Sophie Gilliam, a UNC Chapel Hill senior who goes out at least twice a week. To her, it's the light taste and easy drinking of cider that makes it her go-to. She said, "You go up, all your friends are ordering it, and you're like, that sounds good. And everyone ends up kind of sipping on the same thing. It's just way more fun to drink." Much of the cider market share is taken up by large companies like Angry Orchard and Bold Rock. But Angry Orchard market's share decreased last year over year in 2021, according to 750 Daily, which covers the alcoholic beverage industry. Even if large cideries continue to dominate, it's only good news for craft cider makers like Smith. As the big boys open the doors, the craft makers can squeeze in and find their niche. Most of the well-known national brands, for example, tend to add sugar and carbonation. David Thornton, the co-owner of James Creek Cider House in Cameron, North Carolina, says, "We used to joke that those are what we would call gateway ciders. We don't make anything that's as sweet as what you'll see on the shelves at the supermarket." Thornton and his wife and business partner, Anne Marie Thornton, launched their cider in 2016 and are currently running two labels, their James Creek Small Batch, made with entirely self-grown produce, and their Stargazer label, made with a mix of differently sourced apples. Anne Marie Thornton says, "There's a bunch of local craft breweries who have our cider on tap, and I think their clientele is looking for that taste experience or is looking for something original, and so our cider fits into the whole profile of what they're offering." Being craft means embracing the differences that arise in each batch, even in the face of potential crises. Last year, the Thorntons, along with the rest of North Carolina, were struck by a lousy apple harvest brought on by a mix of factors, including cold temperatures. What apples did grow weren't suitable for any of the three seasonal ciders James Creek usually puts out, so instead, the Thorntons embraced the differences and put out a whippoorwill blend with their weird apples. The label was so successful that the Thorntons continued to produce it, even after harvest improved. David Thornton said, "Try to try something from 5 or 6 different barrels, and you'll see that there really is quite a range of what these apples can do, and that's really fun." To Matty Beeson, the East Coast region manager at Stem Ciders and Boulder Beer in Colorado, the most obvious of those drawing factors is the perceived healthiness of ciders. Though most have a similar calorie content to a glass of wine, they do have a lower percentage of alcohol by volume, and their natural origin appeals to younger consumers more focused on health. Beeson says they have what appears to be a much larger interest in taking care of themselves, their minds, and their bodies than the older generations have in the past. I take that as a personal insult. And so they're looking for things that are healthy, but still enjoyable, both taste-wise and in effect. Max Palmer, another UNC Chapel Hill senior, agreed. Though he only really goes out to drink once a week, it's always a cider you'll find in his glass. When he goes out, he says he wants something lighter in alcohol level that still lets him feel social and like he's drinking. Quote, it's like that's made from apples rather than malted barley or wheat or other stuff like that. So I don't know. Part of me feels like if people are typically asked to, like, go get a cider, it's seen as a more, like, laid-back activity rather than, oh, let's go to a bar and get a beer. In David Thornton's own words, even with its biggest players accounted for, hard cider is still a flea bite on the alcoholic beverage industry. With Gen Z aging into its alcohol and leaning harder on hard cider than its predecessors, that flea bite might become a big enough platform for the big boys and the craft cideries to take a stronger hold of the market. All right, I've often had to cut short my music review articles. Not so this week. I'm going whole hog and reading two in their entirety. First one, Circle of Friends, about Sleepy Cat Records. Nick McGregor writes this. Great record labels are typically built around a central organizing principle. For some labels, that's genre. For others, it's geographic location. For Carbore's small but mighty Sleepy Cat Records, it's a vibe, laid back, familial, and creatively resourceful. Founded in 2019 by longtime friends and musical partners Saman Kujinian and Gabe Anderson, Sleepy Cat elevates that ethos onto its biggest stage yet this Saturday. On Thursday I'm recording this, October the 22nd, with Sleepy Fest 2022. 11 musical acts ranging from folk and old time to indie rock and electro pop. Join 13 artists and makers and 6 food and beverage vendors for 10 hours of blissed out joy at Down Yonder Farm in Hillsboro. Saman and I have always enjoyed organizing events and experiences in fun, refreshing ways, Anderson tells Indie Week on a brisk Wednesday morning at Weaver Street Market in Carbaro. With 11 unique artists that have put stuff out with Sleepy Cat, it just made sense. It's a critical amount to put on a party. Low-key and celebration and easygoing camaraderie also permeate the Sleepy Cat aura. The pandemic was hard on everyone in the label's orbit, most of whom operate in a decidedly do-it-yourself lane and thrive on collaboration. That puts them in line with other Triangle labels like Merge Records and Potluck Foundation, which might function at different scales, but share a tight-knit sense of connection. Kujinian says, Sleepy Cat's general mindset is community-oriented. We're all pretty chill musicians, folks who make music just because they enjoy making music. One Sleepy Cat artist, Steph Stewart, had become such an integral part of that community, she now finds herself easing into a bigger role with the label. She suggested Down Yonder Farm as a prime spot for that festival, brought on the 22 local sponsors, and recruited Raleigh Jill of All Trades, Cameron Laws, program director of Arts Closure, as an operational partner. Stewart will also headline Sleepy Fest with her band, Blue Cactus. Anderson says it's really exciting to have Steph come on. We have so much trust in her understanding of the Sleepy Cat brand and vision. She can make the calls and run with it. Steph kind of taught Gabe and I how to run the label. When Blue Cactus came along, we realized, oh, we have to run a business. Let's make this legit if we're going to actually provide value to our friends. Stewart deflects such praise, reminding them of Sleepy Fest's early roots in Dr. Poplar's Back and Forth, the do-it-yourself two-stage shindig that bounced back and forth between Anderson and Kujinian's house on West Poplar Street, where their band T. Gold was based, and the house behind it, where folk quartet Mipso lived. As we speak, All three smile and finish each other's sentences as they reminisce about those early days rooted in ingenuity and awe. Kuzinin and Anderson first cultivated that vibe as teenagers playing punk rock and studying Afro-Cuban jazz in Miami. They moved to North Carolina in 2009 and 11, respectively, falling in immediately with the Triangle's thriving folk, Americana, and indie rock scene. Along the way, they quietly accumulated more knowledge. Kuzinian taught himself audio engineering, producing, mixing, and mastering, while Anderson extended years of experience working for his family's Pilates business into vision blasting down every possible music industry avenue, project management, graphic design, website development, sync licensing, vinyl production, digital marketing, art direction, and more. Anderson says, as we built a visual universe for our own art, the label became an extension of that thread. We created a place for our music and then found that all of our friends wanted to put music out too. We haven't done a ton of seeking. There's just such a demand of good artists here. Luckily, we happen to like all their music and like them as people. Kuzinin describes Sleepy Cat as a home base for some of those people and a stepping stone for others. Yes, the label is a functioning business with revenue and expenses. Anderson's meticulous spreadsheets prove it. But they're in it for enjoyment, engagement, and empowerment more than anything. As the website says, we are a small business run by two sweeties, friends making art. The Triangle music scene's growth has been marked by this kind of self-sustenance, with access to more local studios, producers, and labels, such as with Sylvan Esso's Trifecta, Betty's, Nick Sanborn, and Amelia Heath behind the dial, and their Psychic Hotline label. Kuzinian says, I don't think we have the bandwidth to work with someone who's deeply career-oriented or wants to be the dominant pop star of all time. It's more, here's the scale at which we can operate. If we can make a little money making the music we love, that's great. Our friends understand that, and if they don't, they can leave. In fact, we encourage them to. We'll be here if they strike out, which we hope they don't. Currently finished albums by Sleepy Cat alumni and Sleepy Fest performers Libby Rodenbaugh and Chessa Rich are being shopped to bigger outlets. Lou Hazel, the musical pseudonym for Chris Fresina, who serves as Sleepy Cat's unofficial photographer and graphic designer, has another record nearly finished, too. Anderson says, yes, we'd love to put it out. It really represents our vibe. But I'm polyamorous, so getting a taste of other labels very much resonates with me. Please date somebody else for a little bit. It's an honest, healthy exchange we have with our friends. As individuals, Kuzinian and Anderson are open to those kinds of educational exchanges. They've learned how to make, record, and produce music, and then market and license it. They've learned how to build back-end support systems for contemplative artists like Jay Hammond of Trippers and Askers, and facilitate the bold creative ideas of big thinkers like Owen Fitzgerald. They've learned when to go along for the ride with established musicians like Rodenbaugh and Blue Cactus, who are responsible for Sleepy Cat's two best-selling releases, 2020's Spectacle of Love and 2021's Stranger Again, respectively. And they've learned how to strike out into new territory, as with Joseph DeCosimo's forthcoming album, While You Were Slumbering, which broadens the Sleepy Cat universe into old time and bluegrass. Anderson says, it's been fun to see what our value is to each artist individually. Some, like Owen, have clarity and intention about every detail and image. Some, like Joseph, are teaching us. Kuzinian mentions combing public domain databases for songs DeCosimo learned from elderly Cumberland Plateau pickers, many of which only exist within the families that have passed them down for generations. Anderson raves about DeCosimo's meticulous liner notes and his insistence on using Bandcamp as a promotional platform, something Sleepy Cat had never done before. It's hard to resist the duo's excitement about what they've achieved and what lies ahead once they pull off Sleepy Fest 2022. They're passionate about giving artists a fair financial and contractual shake while expanding the Sleepy Cat universe outward to include more diverse artists. Like non-white dudes, Anderson emphasizes. They rave about the potential of the compilation model, best exemplified in Sleepy Cat's 2022 release, Cruisin', full of B-sides, covers, home recordings, and one-off collabs between artists. The nine-song sampler is stylistically divergent and straight-up joyous. Kozhinian says that's the main ethos behind the label, being a platform for generating new music. If we do these compilations consistently enough, 10 or 20 years down the road, we'll have a massive archive of music. Other ideas they toss around include more music videos, more studio time at go-to spots like Big Fish Small Pond and Bedtown Studios, more opportunities for artists to produce their own music, and as revenue increases, more chances to be financial benefactors for promising young artists. Kozhinian says, one day we'd love to basically fund the records that we want to see in the world. To some extent, that is an old-school label model. We've got the buddy, you're just the talent. Laughing, Anderson interjects, the big question is, how do we get that money in a sustainable, non-exploitative way? And Kozhinian grins and finishes up. It's more about loving and trusting somebody's creative vision enough to help them from the ground up. If we can be the vehicle for music that would otherwise not have come into existence, I'm satisfied. All right, and two reviews of releases now by Spencer Griffith, one, and Jordan Lawrence. And Spencer writes about Cruel Liars. As pandemic projects continue to start seeing the light of day, Cruel Liars, the 8-track debut from Mightmare, might prove itself to be one of the most rewarding, revealing new sides of Sarah Shook's personality, both musical and otherwise. Shook was newly sober in the first year of the pandemic and had another album already finished, Night Roamer, recorded in early 2020 with the Disarmers, but awaiting a release under more favorable touring conditions, and found themselves exploring and recording Cruel Liars nearly entirely on their own. Shook, who's begun using the first name River in personal and professional settings, including Mightmare's promotional materials, built their musical identity as the country outlaw Sarah. For more than a decade, they've led a trio of fiery outfits, leaning heavily on cowpunk and honky-tonk, but Mightmare finds Shook distancing themselves from those expected backgrounds by swapping their twang for more adventurous textures. Echoes of Shook's high, lonesome croon Shade album opener, Come What May, revealing early that they'd be ditching their familiar confines while casting their trademark vocals in a haunted setting accented by accordion and harp. Eerie keyboards and an ominous drum loop set a brooding backdrop for the title track, which Shook matches by ruminating on how love's end descends us into hell, as layered harmonies build intensity. On the album's penultimate track, Shook reveals a new kind of vulnerability. The breezy, love-struck pop ditty Easy feels borderline giddy as they sing affirmations like, you deserve love, don't you ever forget it, that diverge from the rest of the album's darker lyricism. Although a sharp contrast in terms of style, the sparse closer Sure Thing similarly finds Shook taking bigger risks, resulting in bigger payoffs. There's a twinge of twang marking lines that would fit neatly on a Disarmers record, as when the lyrics, Ain't Gonna Be No Memory Gonna Haunt Me Down Tonight, are sung atop a somber piano and strings that are eventually joined by a propulsive programmed beat and electric guitar accents heightening the drama. Clocking in at under a half hour, Cruel Liars doesn't overstay its welcome. It feels like an intriguing taste of the new rewards to come if Shook continues to explore other musical avenues, no matter the name. And Spencer Griffith gives that Mightmare on Kill Rock Stars record, releasing October the 14th, as 4 stars. And the second, JP Phono 1, release Low Key Companion, and Potluck, October 21st. That, Jordan Lawrence gives 3.5 stars. And it goes, "This is my yard, my street, my neighborhood, my home. This is the music of a space I occupy." These words from Carborough's John Harrison describe Low Key Companion, the latest album from his increasingly prolific and far-flung project, J. Phono 1. Across the last decade, Harrison has charted a course through indie rock that bends and sparkles somewhere between Pavement and Creedence Clearwater Revival into headier territories, such as the intergalactic jazz of this year's Arcing Phase to Phase, a collaborative EP with Paling Light and his improvisatory drone duo, Tacoma Park. Like that second project, Tacoma Park, Low Key Companion explores the human feedback between what we perceive and what we feel. The album, through the inclusion of both raw field recordings and intimately emotional melodies, oscillates between serenity and unease, frequently and impressively occupying both at once. It evokes the way comfortably familiar environs spark bittersweet thoughts, which change the way we feel about a given environment. The instrumental album pendulums through guitar-girded improvisational porch jams, both acoustic and electric, and beat-forward electro pieces, giving it a scattered feel that makes for a somewhat challenging listen. It's hard not to wish Harrison had developed either mode at greater length, as the 7 to 7 minute snippets glimpse places one could happily get lost in for half hour or more. But the album's keen sense of place and perception unites and elevates its odds and sods assemblage. Pedal Steel, contributed by Nathan Golub, wavers between contentment and unease in the opening Backyard at Bug Harbor, underpinned by crunching leaves and eventually a skittering, scratching sound that resembles both insects and a Geiger counter, prompting poignant confusion about whether this is all meant to resemble the natural world or some intrusion into it. Various instrumental lines from acoustic guitar and banjo meet and tangle on Tacoma Park, which features guitar contributions for Tacoma Park's Ben Felton, rotating through beaming interludes, driving rhythms, and minor key contortions like the varied emotions of flipping through an old photo album. Ominous synth billows near the end, and the instruments coalesce into an overwhelming swell as overlapping thoughts crescendo into anxiety. The beatscape of Poppy Patrol starts out airy and carefree before foreboding technological scrapes insert themselves, eventually erupting into a cavalcade of caustic brightness, neatly evoking moments when your own environment, or at least your perception, suddenly overwhelms. Our space shapes our thoughts. Our thoughts change how we experience our space, and Low Key Companion gets a lot of mileage out of probing the in-between, writes Jordan Lawrence with his 3.5 stars for J. Phono 1, Low Key Companion. All right, I guess my best use of 8 minutes is to follow through on at least a reading of some school board candidates from various towns. I'll read a few and just select them off the top from the three areas of, and really persuade you to go online to indieweek.com, and you can see the full paragraph or two given to each candidate with a variety of reasoning behind the IndyWeeks endorsement. So from Wake County, the Board of Education says, in the messy, over-politicized race for Wake County School Board, we're supporting candidates with proven experience, liberal values, and no association with the so-called parental rights movement, which has mostly come down against mask mandates, inclusive education practices, and teachers. Ben Clapsaddle, an Army veteran and training director, is an advocate for raising teacher pay, hiring more counselors and support staff, and investing in resources for children with disabilities. He's also in support of the practical needs of our growing county, like school repair and construction. Clapsaddle, who has been endorsed by the Wake County Association of Educators and his predecessor, Heather Scott, is an easy pick over his conservative opponent, Cheryl Caulfield, a Moms for Liberty supporter who considers information about gender identity age inappropriate. That's District 1. District 2, Monica Johnson Hostler, first elected to the board in 2013, is an experienced, consistent advocate for students and teachers. During her time on the board, Johnson Hostler helped lead the charge to reduce student suspensions and racial disparities in discipline. If reelected, she plans to continue that work by identifying ways to resolve behavioral problems while keeping children in school and on track to graduate, she says. Like our other endorsees, Johnson Hostler is an advocate for more social workers, school counselors, and nurses. She also supports raising pay for teachers by increasing Wake County's contribution to their salaries. As the state's Republican legislature makes consistent cuts to the education budget, Johnson Hostler is fighting to keep qualified and experienced teachers in Wake County. She plans to continue lobbying the state for more school funding. One of her opponents, Monica Ruiz, is openly homophobic, calling gender fluidity a false idea. The other, Dorian Hamilton, lacks Johnson Hostler's wealth of experience. In District 3, Doug Hammack gets the nod. He says he credits his success in life to investment in education and plans to continue the board's work in funding teachers in schools. One of the major problems the county is facing this year is a loss of qualified teachers, in part due to the coronavirus pandemic and in part due to consistent pay cuts. Hammack pledges to support pay raises and teachers themselves. If elected, he says he wants to be aggressive in addressing staff shortages, hiring counselors and social workers. And he's also the only rational choice against two Republicans, including Wing Nguyen, whose platform raises some major red flags. Let's see. Lynn Edmonds from District 5 is running to replace Jim Martin, an outspoken liberal who has actively advocated for raising teacher pay and renovating aging schools. Martin's blunt comments have often drawn criticism from parents and sometimes other board members, but he has always pushed issues forward. Edmonds, who has been endorsed by Martin, is another champion of public schools. As the director of Outreach for Public Schools First, NC, she's spent years lobbying the legislature to fully fund the Leandro Plan and raise teacher pay. If elected, Edmonds says she'll prioritize attracting qualified staff, expanding equity across the district, and supporting curriculum integrity and the freedom to read. Not only does Edmonds have a progressive agenda, but she has the experience to back it up. And I'll do a couple other districts for the Wake County School Board. Linza Mahaffey, District 8, chair of the board, first elected in 2016. They endorse her again. If reelected, she aims to expand tutoring programs to help students with learning loss. Her opponent, Steve Bergstrom, went on national news to tout helping get an elementary school teacher to leave her job over flashcards and is firmly on the parental choice book banning train. And District 9, Tyler Swanson, a former Wake schoolteacher, refreshingly young and down-to-earth candidate. He wants to improve school safety by adding more school counselors and nurses. Swanson will bring a breath of fresh air to the board's effort to improve schools, and he's the only rational choice against Republican Michelle Morrow, a conspiracy theorist who called mass shootings fake events, talked about the one world order, and implied Satan is coming in the form of the Muslim movement in America. just some example of the candidate disparities in this election. And I'll cherry pick the next couple of elections because there are no other school boards elections up in Orange or Durham County. But let's look at the Durham County, Soil and Water District Supervisor. Should we pay any attention to those? David Harris is given the nod as worsening floods pose threats to Durham's land and water quality. We throw our support behind incumbent David Harris, a Rougemont native. We don't know enough about the race's other candidate to make an endorsement, but assuming Weller wins the board's second open seat, and he should, because he's the only other candidate running, we look forward to meeting him. Let's see. Sheriff Clarence Burkhead. When incumbent Durham County Sheriff Clarence Burkhead was first elected in 2019, he was one of seven black sheriffs elected to the position in the state's largest counties. Burkhead, who won his primary with more than 80% of the vote, is being challenged by retired and FBI agent and Durham native Maria Joses, J-O-C-Y-S. From the onset of Joses announcing her campaign, the race has been contentious. Burkhead has endorsements from the city's most influential political action committees and a list of first-term accomplishments that include rejecting ICE detainers and banning no-knock warrants. Soon after retiring from the FBI in December, Joseph started a website and persuaded 4% of Durham's registered voters to sign a petition that would allow her to run as an unaffiliated sheriff's candidate. Joseph has introduced a six-point reform agenda that includes a total ban on no-knock warrants. She also questions whether the incumbent has banned no-knock warrants, as he says he has. Joss's experience working for the FBI definitely qualifies her for the job as sheriff, but as a Durham native, she's not very well known in the community, and it's not clear what her contributions have been. So, while his tenure as sheriff has been problematic at times, we're sticking with Burkhead for another term. So we bring our Election edition, election recommendations edition, to a close with as many other things as we can pile in there. I hope you've gotten some informative value from this. If you want to hear any of it again, we have this broadcast on after Friday in our podcast section. It's called Indie Independent. And then I'll be back next week with the next edition of Indie Week for you all. From the North Carolina Reading Service, this is John Federson saying, have a lovely weekend, everybody.